Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 51, and I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Big thanks to my brother and sister-in-law. We had a nice family gathering, Dave, and I got to tell you, I had as good a meal as I've had in a long time. It was good fun to see everybody and be with everybody, and I caught a fair bit of football, although not a lot, I have to say, that really kept my interest over the other things we had going on with family. So it was a good day, and now we got a little Friday, and we got a little more than 72 hours till Steelers-Packers on Sunday night at Heinz Field.
Yeah, I was very thankful not to have to spend Thanksgiving with hardly any humans, except my wife, and obviously she's learned to tolerate me over the years. A lot of trips up and down the stairs to get some food, and you know, we bought I think it was like $120 worth of food from Honey Baked Ham. Prior, when did we go? I think it was Wednesday that we went, and Tuesday or Wednesday, and man, we have already we've almost wiped it all out. I think there's maybe one plate of food left down in there. It's just the two of us, and you got to remember there was a couple of pies mixed in there. I think it was a 4-pound ham and 3.5 pounds of sliced turkey as well too. So mashed potatoes and corn and all that good stuff. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. And now I suppose I'm gonna have to fast for a little bit. She made me walk a little bit longer yesterday. I think she's trying to tell me something yesterday, but a lot of football. And as you said, I thought the first game would be a little bit better than what it ended up being. And then the second game, I thought Dallas might have a little something for Chargers. That ended up not being the case. And then, of course, in the nightcap, that was you didn't need tryptophan or whatever they call it. That one right there could put you to sleep quite easily on a full belly.
Yeah, and we'll get into those a little bit when we get to our picks later today. But, yeah, it was not the most scintillating of Thursday slates.
Perhaps the biggest takeaway, I think, maybe from the last couple of weeks of football, especially games that have been televised, is, I went ahead and researched this just in case we was going to talk about it. You know, Jordan Berry, the Steelers punter, has never, back when he played for, who was it, Eastern, whatever, Kentucky, I think it was, never attempted an extra point or a field goal. Field goal while he was there, and who would be the Steelers' backup, place kicker should something happen to a guy like Chris Boswell? And I think the first thing that came to my mind is maybe Antonio Brown. Didn't he try a couple of those during training camp or something this year? I was trying to go back through some of my notes and didn't have enough time, but I don't think it would be Jordan Berry if Chris Boswell went down. And boy, you look around the league, especially the Dallas Cowboys, 2 weeks in a row, they have gone up against a team whose kicker's gotten knocked out early, and they couldn't take advantage of it.
A couple thoughts on this. I know people listening to the podcast know this is a massive pet peeve that I have, that with all the time in training camp and all the time during the course of the season and practices, I mean, it should be de rigueur for punters to be working on extra points and field goals, and for place kickers to work on punting. I mean, this is, look, it's not their craft, but it doesn't mean you can't spend half an hour a week or 45 minutes a week just working on your technique. Dave, I'd be shocked if it wasn't Jordan Berry, but I don't have inside info on that. It's just amazing to me that there could be first of all, there can't be a kicker out there who can't punt, because if you kicked, the chances are you fooled around with the soccer ball and you did things, and the styles are so similar. I guess I could I could fathom the idea that you could have been a punter, you could be a punter and not have played soccer and not have kind of tried to, dabbled in kicking extra points or field goals. But I do find that hard to believe that a punter in a college program and then in the NFL isn't just every once in a while kicking extra points and field goals. I mean, it blows my mind that there's not – that those guys don't do that all the time. So I don't know. I would be surprised if it's Jordan Berry. If it wasn't Jordan Berry, then you pick a guy who's played soccer, who's your best athlete. And Antonio Brown's probably as good a guess as any. I wouldn't even know where to begin. Juju, I was very impressed with that guy from the Eagles kicking the ball down into the end zone. I mean, that guy looked like he absolutely knew what he was doing. So they were prepared, and good on them, not good on the Chargers.
Well, and like I said, I went back and looked at his it says you look at his bio talking about Jordan Berry from Eastern Kentucky, excels at rugby punting, also serves as a team's holder on field goal attempts. So so here's the thing, though. Much like when one of your offensive linemen goes down, you want the less kind of position switches as possible, you would think, when something like that happens. The whole snap, hold, kick mechanism, as they like to refer to, would it be Ben Roethlisberger that would have to hold?
I'm sure Landry would be the holder there.
Yeah, might be Landry. And how many times do they practice that, though? I mean, you would think probably not.
And if I were in there Tuesdays, I'd be asking that question, and I would have asked it last week after that Eagles Cowboys game, because as I say, you're great to bring it up, that I've had that be in my bonnet about that for years when I see teams unprepared. You talk about, Dave, we talk about what control fixes, how fixated in being complete control that head coaches are across the board. This is not a common occurrence, of course, but it's not an unforeseen occurrence. It's not something that you've never seen, or known to have happen. Just like the long snapper situation with James Harrison against the Giants years ago. I mean, it can happen. What's your contingency plan? And if you don't have one, it's inexcusable, really, in my mind. Look, the guy may not succeed, but you better know what you're going to do if you face the situation.
And look, here's the thing. At least have somebody that you think you could get, have a 75% chance of to at least make an extra point, right?
I would say in the old days, in the old days from the two and, from the spot back there, two and a half yard line, I would say, look, I'm walking out and making the extra point. I mean, it's just factually, I'm doing that. I don't like saying that I can do things that professional athletes do at my age. I mean, you can't. When I was back then, there were some things I could do. I could walk out and kick an extra point all day, every day. Now, look, how do you deal with the stress and the pressure and all that stuff? Okay, I'm not put, but the physical act of any of those guys, kicking an extra point is not difficult. Now, from 30, it's a whole different thing from 33 yards. It's significantly more challenging. So yeah, I'm with you on the percentages.
And I mean, obviously you're not going to expect a guy to be able to drill one, much past that point.
But yeah, 35 yards in, I would think a guy who's competent, you should kind of expect him to make it. And after that, you're flipping coins.
And obviously you're hoping that if your drive's going to stall at some point, it would be well within, it would hopefully be within an extra point range and all like that. But I mean, just look at, how that could have cost the Chargers in that game yesterday. So I'm trying to remember back, and I forgot to DM Alex before I got on, because obviously he was at all the training camp practices. But it seems like I remember Antonio Brown or some, somebody fooling around with that, be able to make it. And the best thing about that is if you had a guy such as that, at least you wouldn't have to change up the mechanism of your holder, where there's they're not many reps you would think going on during practice without him being the holder, and go from there. Now, obviously, if Jordan Berry could do it, I don't know, as long as Chris Boswell could probably walk and get on the field, maybe he has enough you know, experience them fooling around of getting some votes. But, you know, we joked in the past, what the heck does Mike Tomlin do during the game? Well, maybe we should joke a little bit more. What the hell does Jordan Berry and Chris Boswell do during practices, you know?
Yep.
And Cameron Kennedy as well, the long snapper, because obviously he's not involved in a lot of stuff either. So, that would be, you know, maybe when Bob Labriola talks to Mike Tomlin ahead of this game, you know, like he likes to do, what is it, every Saturday or whatnot, maybe he'll be smart enough with this kind of being topical right now to ask Mike Tomlin what the backup plan would be. And here's, you know, God forbid we should ever see it, but face it, Chris Boswell likes to get active in tackling occasionally, and he could just as easily get knocked out of a game on the opening kickoff as the next guy there. So definitely that was on my mind coming out of the game yesterday.
Yeah, it's the right question. It's a good question. And, those are the times I miss being there on Tuesdays. But, I'm not sure Mike would even necessarily give you the answer. So it's a good point. As they pointed out in the broadcast, very odd to see it happen twice in 2 weeks against the same team in the same building. So, you know, Nick Novak, you know, it's one of those things where the guy gets in the game and you do that and you have that feeling after you kick. It was amazing to me that he came back and tried again, because, you know, when you're on the sidelines trying that you're just waiting for everything to blow apart. But okay, so we'll get to the Chargers and all the goings on of yesterday. Dave, I guess the most interesting stuff through here with the Steelers yesterday morning workout on Thanksgiving Day was the injury report, and kind of as I expected after seeing Wednesday's stuff, nothing really good on the Thursday injury report is how I would characterize it.
Yeah, it's not. Juju, nothing, you know, it's not looking good for him, especially being a young player now, and with that, as Mike Tomlin called it, a small hamstring injury. Not looking like he's going to play against the Packers. I mean, we'll obviously see what happens during Friday's practice, but, I mean, the bulk of it's already in, one would think. And, you know, even if he was able to go limited, in a nutshell, it doesn't look good for him. And Vance McDonald, a guy that I would have probably – would have liked my odds of him being able to play this week after missing, you know, the game a week ago against the Titans. He's still not practicing. That's not good. Of course, Joe Hayden's already ruled out of this game with his fibula injury. And then Mike Mitchell not going the right way on the injury report. So he was limited on Thursday, and now you have to wonder if he's going to be ready to go. And really the only guy, you know, on the injury report that has been positive, I think, all week would be James Harrison. And James Harrison is a guy that even if he's active, how many snaps is he going to play? So I think, you know, looking at things right now, obviously we're recording this before the Friday injury and final injury report is out. You would have to think Hayden, Juju, Vance McDonald, and Mike Mitchell will all be on the inactive list Sunday night, to go along with, Joshua Dobbs, possibly, you know, Daniel McCullers, you could probably flip a coin with. You don't know which way the number's going to work out right there that might allow him to get a helmet. And, you know, Cameron Sutton, Mike left the door open on Tuesday for him not dressing, even though he is now on the 53-man roster. So this thing's going to fill up quick, I think. And, you know, it might even result in James Harrison getting an extra helmet, if you will, and maybe not even playing a defensive snap.
With you on all of that. We'll see how it plays out. Certainly see what the Friday injury report says. I don't know that we'll get that while we're on the air today.
Oh, I should have mentioned Hawkins is probably going to be one of those inactives as well. So, you know, it very well could come down to who's the seventh inactive. Is it going to be James Harrison or Cameron Sutton? At least Cameron Sutton, you could get a little bird on special teams. You're not going to get that out of James Harrison and with the four other guys. I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see how it's handled down at the bottom of that inactive list. I mean, nothing earth-shattering. I mean, this team can obviously win without the guys that are probably going to be out with injury, but it'd be interesting to see which way Mike goes with this regardless.
Dave, is this the least interesting game of the year for the Steelers based on timing on the schedule, opponents, quality of opponent, standings, what's coming up, what's gone past? Is this the one? Look, they're you know, we're interested in all of them. They all count. They all matter. But when you think about it, when you look at the calendar and look at the games, this is not what we expected this game to be with Aaron Rodgers and a big Sunday night showcase Thanksgiving weekend. To me, this one doesn't have a lot of stirring interest because of what I expect. And obviously because of the way the Steelers finished against the Titans and what we've seen from Green Bay with Hundley at quarterback. I've said it, you know, a bunch of times now that I don't expect this game to be competitive. So to me, this one's, you know, I hope I'm right. Let's put it that way. I hope it is the least interesting.
I don't know. What'd you think ahead of the game against the Colts a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
You know, if anything, here's the thing about the game against the Colts. Jacoby Brissett, I mean, look, I mean, he's probably not I think what Jacoby Brissett has proven this season, even ahead of the game against the Steelers, was that he is a viable couple of game starter for you. He can sling it down the football field. He's definitely athletic in nature. Can make some good decisions. He is a guy that I think you can get by with, and like I said, a viable couple.
Do you think he's a top 20 quarterback in the NFL?
No. I mean, well, I'd have to redraw it out again, David, to be honest with you.
Well, just roughly, you know, I think he can start in the league. I don't think he's ever going to be a top 10 guy, but I think he'll be better than 10 guys.
I mean, can we name, where do you have Deshaun Watson, a guy like Deshaun Watson at right now? Where do you have a guy like Case Keenum right now?
Oh, Case Keenum's way up the list.
Where do you have a guy like Bortles right now?
I have them ahead of guys like Flacco and Eli, and I mean, there are plenty of bad quarterbacks out there. So, I'm not putting them in the Pro Bowl, but you know, if I were playing the rest of the season and I had to choose Eli or Flacco or Mitch Trubisky or you know anybody in San Francisco, the C.J. Beathard or whatever, I'd take he's better than I thought he'd be. That's the other thing I guess I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, and this all goes back to even so though with him and with the injuries that team had, I mean that Colts game wasn't looking too appetizing before it was played. That one ended up being 20-17. Obviously the Packers, and I guess it's a perfect time to kind of segue into kind of previewing this game more in depth. Hundley's a mess. I mean,
I agree.
He is a mess, and the thing is, the instant takeaways that I got from him when going through his tape was, man, he sure holds on to the football a long time. And when you look at that first, and then go look at the next gen stats on him. You're like, okay, no wonder. He, on average, snap to throw is over 3 seconds, David. I mean, that's a long time. I mean, there's a lot of indecision going on in there. And when you kind of look at what has happened with his sacks so far this year and how they've happened and you know, not all just against the blitz and not all just against man or zone coverage. A lot of them against, I think, defensive linemen have got him instead of linebackers. Now, I don't know if they're classifying that as outside linebackers technically being defensive linemen. You know, that should probably be the case. But regardless, very, very indecisive. Not good at all in the pocket as well, too. So, you know, my instant thoughts when going back through his tape was, what would I try to do this week against the Steelers with him to get him comfortable in the game? And, you know, I think I think you try to make it quick. You try to get him quick decisions right out of the chute and have him try to get the football out on a quick first or second read, much in the way that Carson Wentz did in that for his start against the Steelers. When was it? Last season, early last season, especially when the Steelers played off in those situations. Make quick reads for him. Let him get the ball out. And on top of that, I think I try to get him out of the pocket on the move with some easy throws, easy reading throws early in the game. That's what I think I would do because if you're the Steelers, you might want to sacrifice some of your edge pressure by making sure that he's having to step up into the pocket. In other words, run Dupree and or Watt a little further up the arc just a little bit, just to make sure that you cut off those escape lanes. And then a guy like Ryan Shazier, I think, really going to have to be mindful and the rest of the defensive line of escape lanes for him. I want Hundley in the pocket attempting passes as much as possible. And when it comes to blitzing, he obviously hasn't been great against the blitz this year, but I don't think that's carte blanche for just saying go after him. However, when you get him in situations, which hopefully there should be a lot in this game, talking about second and eight, second and nine, second and ten, third and really anything over 4 or 5 yards, I think you make him process some stuff, sending Hilton off the edge and maybe sending Vince Williams or Ryan Shazier up after him, because he obviously hasn't been able to process that and go from there. So this, the biggest takeaway when you look at their offense, outside of the fact that it doesn't look like they're running the football very well at all, and if they have to, these two young running backs of theirs just really haven't been great so far. And if a guy like Ty Montgomery doesn't play, and he's been on the injury report the last couple games, and he did not play against the Ravens last week. Guys like Jamal Williams and Devontae Mays, you're just asking for it. And going back to blitzing again, what do you normally want to do when you have your opposition has some young running backs in the game? You really want those guys to have to make decisions on who to block with extra blockers there. And if you can get the Packers in a situation where they're having to maybe max protect in situations where they normally probably wouldn't, when they have Aaron Rodgers and a guy like maybe Ty Montgomery on the field, that's a win for you, because that's one less guy out in the pass pattern as well too. So overall, they haven't been able to get the ball to Jordy Nelson since Aaron Rodgers went down. I like what they do with Randall Cobb, with moving him around. In fact, he's probably their most dangerous threat right now, but even so, haven't been able to connect with him like they should be able to do. And a guy like Hundley, I think, is something like 33% on his deep passing attempts so far. So you can get worried for them real quick when going back through their offensive tape.
Hey, Coley, one of the most telling things is Hundley, in last week's game against the Ravens, he got sacked twice on fourth down. I mean, just awareness. I watched that game. I saw those plays. It's just awareness, what you're trying to do, what the game situation is. You'd expect better. The guy's been around a little bit. And, look, they've had their problems injury-wise and everything else. But I'm with you. The skill positions, nothing great. You pay attention to Jordy. You know what's going on. The running backs, you're exactly right. If Ty Montgomery isn't able to go, the guys they have are just guys. And I can't see them putting up a lot of points in that environment. I just don't see it happening. And the Steelers offensively, this will be the interesting aspect of this game for sure, is to see how the Steelers offense comes out in this one, how they, after a Ben's best half of football in a long time in the game last week against the Titans, whether they play with tempo or not. I think, if you want to talk about some confusing things out of the positives, you go back to the Bengals game, you look at the Titans game, you look at the Colts game, the Steelers seem to, for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's our own selective biases in terms of what we're seeing, and maybe just maybe falsely remembering positives. But it seems to me the Steelers, when they change tempo at times this year again, and I think it's been true historically, have played a little better. Now, Ben's stats don't necessarily look all that much better before this game last week, and the second half was just just do whatever you want to do. But I'm going to be interesting to see what kind of game plan, Dave, that the Steelers come out with for this one, what they, both in tempo and in run pass, how they choose to elect to attack the Packers.
Yeah, David, real quick, I had these on my fingertips before we got on, and then lost them and then got them back real quick before we move on talking about the offensive tack for the Steelers there. Per NFL matchup on ESPN, their sack numbers when they went through all 17 of his sacks this year. Six of his 17 were against the blitz this year. That's 35%. The average distance to the first down on those 17 sacks was 9.4 yards, and thus that goes back to what I was saying. When you get them in those predictable kind of situations, down in distance, get after him. 10 I'm hearing some feedback there. That's weird. 10 versus zone coverage, 7 versus man, and when it comes down to defensive line, 10 of those 17 sacks were defensive linemen, 4 by linebackers, and 3 by defensive backs. Now, once again, I don't know if they're classifying D-line, especially against a 3-4 team, as being, when an outside linebacker gets a sack, are they considering that D-line or linebacker? It really doesn't matter. In general, when you look at these stats as a whole, the fact is it really kind of doesn't matter when and how outside of maybe the average distance when that comes into play there. So this is a guy that obviously takes a lot of sacks there, and one would think the Steelers will be able to get after him. One other stat by NFL matchup is something like they lead the league or close to the lead league in getting pressure when they do blitz, talking about the Steelers. So that's definitely a huge part of this game. And once again, it goes back to my thoughts on Hundley is saying, man, I try to get the ball out of his hand as quick as possible early on in this game.
If you were the Packers or if you're the Steelers?
No, if you're the Packers, you want him to get that ball out.
Right. I'm sure they're going to try to run the football. And, I think that's going to play right into the Steelers' hands. So, we'll see how it goes. I mean, if you're the Packers here, you want to shorten the game. This is we hear the Steelers often take this tack, which I know bothers a lot of fans, and at times bothers me as well, that with the explosiveness over the years that they've had offensively, shortening the game doesn't necessarily seem like the right avenue to pursue. But in this one, it is certainly the avenue the Packers are going to want to pursue. So if the Steelers, I would expect them to be aggressive in stopping the run early. And, if they're the Packers, maybe you say the only way we win this game is, we're going to have to take some play action shots with Jordy when we have the chance. And, if that's the Steelers, I'm aggressively playing against the run, but just being a little bit careful toward Jordy and probably rolling safety cover. Look, the Packers, what they have is they've got receivers. So, it's pick your poison. But I'm worrying about Jordy first and then the other guys. I think from both sides, it'll be interesting to see how they choose to attack because of the different capabilities of their quarterbacks.
I mean, they've got some great receivers over there.
They do.
Jordy, Davante Adams, Cobb, that kid Geronimo Allison. I don't know if Jeff Janis has been. I forgot to look if he's been active or not for them. But they've got guys. I mean, they've got some good receivers on that team. And up until, of course, Martellus Bennett left, they had a decent tight end. Lance Kendricks really hasn't, I don't think, overall done, been a huge factor for them this year. But, their offensive line with Bakhtiari at left tackle, probably one of the best left tackles in the league. They've had some issues, obviously, with health on that offensive line. And, boy, Corey Lindsey, their center, showed up on the injury report for them on Thursday with a back injury. And if he can't play, Then I guess I think I read something that Justin McCray, the right tackle, would have to switch over to center or something along those lines. So that's something else to kind of watch for. Now back to you talking about the Steelers, and their offense. The other thing that stuck out to me when watching the tape on the Packers defense is they haven't been bad against the run this year. And I think somewhere along the line, I forget what the percentage was, 36% opposing running backs, only a 36% success rate by opposing running backs against their defense, 36.1, which is obviously good, a good number for a defense to have there. Now, Kenny Clark, I think it'll be surprising if Kenny Clark plays for them after suffering that ankle injury last week. And that is that would be obviously a huge loss for them. Quentin Dial is also banged up, the guy that would likely replace Kenny Clark in there. So that, that's something to watch how the Steelers kind of attack that, especially up the middle when that base defense is in there. If you don't have a guy like Juju in there for the Steelers, and let's say Vance McDonald isn't able to play, do you try to spread him out, or do you try to get a guy like Roosevelt Nix a few more snaps? And let's be quite honest here, David, the Steelers running game, it's been decent at times, but as a whole, the Steelers running game hasn't been great this year. I mean, especially from a successful play rate. And I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but when Vance McDonald has not been on the field, probably even a little lesser than great there. So, do you try to attack a defense that's been good against the run that might be without guys such as Mike Daniels and Clay Matthews early and often? Or do you try to bring out your no huddle and kind of go after them and maybe catch them with their base defense on the field and try to expose them that way?
Yeah, it's going to be an opportunity. I don't think Juju's going to play, so it's going to be an opportunity for Martavis and Eli Rogers. The Steelers have had you go back to the Cincinnati game, the two drives they had early there when they scored and looked so good doing it, and then what they did in the second half. It's you have a plan of attack, and you look and see what the defense is going to give you. Against the Bengals, they were more balanced. Certainly, I think in a bit of a surprise, the Steelers were clearly focused on throwing the football against the Titans. And I think your point about Mike Daniels is a good one, Clay Matthews and Mike Daniels. I think the Steelers will be able to pick their poison here in this one. And I think you'll see some balance. I guess one of the things, Dave, it'll be interesting to see if they come out and try to throw the ball deep, or if they think they can do so many different things that they can be, kind of work the ball down the field against this Packers defense. So if you ask me who's going to have more total yards in the Le'Veon Bell running the ball or Antonio Brown catching the ball in this one, I'd say flip a coin. I don't have a good sense of what the Steelers are going to do. I'm interested to see. I think that's what is the most interesting thing about this game, but I don't have a good guess. Maybe you've got a better sense of it than I do.
Well, here's the other thing that sticks out, I thought, when looking at the Packers defense, and it's not like this is new by any stretch of the imagination, trying to disguise what your coverage shell is going to be. But I think one thing that kind of jumped out to me was that they seemed to do, at least against the Ravens last week, they seem to do a little bit better job than average of being able to kind of disguise and rotating their safeties right. In other words, not tipping their hand till right at the football snap. They're good at about showing you maybe a two high safety look, and then right at pre-snap rotating one to the middle of the field and one down into the box in either kind of a robber type situation there, or vice versa. They are good at kind of showing you a one high look, and then right before the snap of the football rotating into kind of a two high look. I don't have any hard data to base that on as of timing versus pre-snap of the football, but that's just one thing that kind of stuck out to me. And you know, if they're able to maybe confuse Roethlisberger, kind of, you know, a few times more times than not, of thinking that he's seeing one thing and then actually presenting another, you know, maybe that can play into their favor there. But make no mistake, this is a Dom Capers defense, a lot of, you know, 3-4 base principles, a lot of things. You know, I guess what I'm getting at is how good of a could you have structured your schedule any better to go from facing a Dick LeBeau defense to a Dom Capers type defense as well. So, you know, the familiarity over the last couple of weeks would kind of, and of course, obviously going against your own 3-4 defense and some of the principles that Keith Butler has, all of this should, in essence, play in favor to the Steelers. And and the only other thing that kind of stuck out to me about the Packers defense this year as a whole is not only have they not been great in the red zone this year as far as giving up, you know, touchdowns on opposing red zone trips, they are last in the league, 80% success rate on the road. And people say, boy, 80%, and the numbers of that is opposing offenses have converted 8 of 10 opportunities. And you say, man, only 10 trips inside the red zone on the road is what they've allowed this year. Well, you have to keep in mind, folks, they've only played four road games this year, and one of those was against the Bears a couple of weeks ago, and they didn't allow any red zone trips, I don't believe, in that game. So 8 of 10 of those red zone trips essentially happen in 3 games this year. So that's definitely something going to look at heading into this game, eh? And we all know the Steelers' red zone problems that they've had this year, but seemingly got cured or were better in this game against the Titans this past Thursday. Now, obviously, you're not going to have Marcus Gilbert in there. You'll have Chris Hubbard in there. But with that said, there's no reason to think that this Steelers offense, once they get inside the red zone, shouldn't have, you know, 50% or better success against this Packers defense.
Yeah, Dom Rinelli, one of the Steelers PR guys, was tweeting some stuff this week, and he put out there the Steelers are 8-0 when scoring at least 19 points in 2017. Only 3 teams have scored at least 19 points in more games than the Steelers. To me, that's kind of a deceiving stat, because the Steelers are 8-0 in those games primarily because of their defense, not because of their offense. Obviously, they're second in the league in points allowed per game, just behind Jacksonville. So that's a big point in their favor. And the other side of that is the Steelers have put up more than 21 points only 4 times this season. 19 teams have done that at least 5 times, and 3 others have done it 4 times. So the Steelers haven't put up, you know, this isn't anything new. This is what we've been talking about all year long. They haven't put up the points. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can go and do that against a Packers team that, you know, obviously we think they should do that. In terms of the D, just to throw some numbers out there, if you didn't see it on Twitter that I put up earlier this week, the improvement in the Steelers' defense here 10 games into the season is the points per game. They've gone from 20.6 to 16.5. They've gone from 10th to 2nd. And then these are, you know, the key components that really drive points per game. Third down conversions, they've gone from 24th to 6th. 42% to 33% that they're getting. This is all on the defensive side of the ball. Yards per play, 5.5 yards to 4.8 yards, 13th to 6th. Yards per game, 10th to 4th. Fourth down conversions from 19th at 55% to 5th at 27%. And sacks per game, they've gone from 2.4 sacks per game, 8th in the league, to 3.5, 2nd in the league. So we've seen all the productive metrics for the defense have taken a big step forward, something that we've expected here. We started to see it last year, maybe a little unexpectedly last year, the level of improvement, and now we're seeing it. Look, this defense hasn't been perfect. Mike talked about the missed tackles. We've talked about the different games where that's been a big key, but they've been able to get turnovers. They've been able to stop teams on third down and get off the field normally when they should. That's a huge deal. And now, you know, if the offense is coming around, this is kind of your dream scenario if you're a Steeler fan. Mike's teams have been so much better in the second halves of seasons. I think they're 26 or 27-7 now over the last since 2013. They continue to play well, and that's the sign of a good football team. It continues to get better. And we'll keep our fingers crossed on the injury front, because obviously that's been a huge bonus for this team versus, you know, just look at this Sunday's opponent, the Packers, on the other side. So if that continues, you got to like where things are going into the last, which will, you know, shortly be here, the final quarter of the season.
And here's the thing about that stat about the points per game that you rattled off there, the 16 point whatever. That's actually wrong, because they counted the defensive
touchdowns. Yeah, it's all points, but it's a team number. Yeah.
But, you know, they counted those pick sixes in that number. So that number is actually like 15 point something in there. And when you go back to the Steelers offense, if you look at some of these metrics that aren't talked a lot about, as far as you know, red zone trips per game and those red zone opportunities per game, the Steelers are up there like what, fourth or fifth or something in the league in that category. So, I mean, the offense, and we've talked about this most of the season, the offense has moved the football. It's just they're not scoring when they get down deep in there. You know, they're settling for the field goals or whatnot instead of scoring the touchdowns. That's the biggest thing that you and seeing the running game improve are two of the biggest factors right now when you look at this team offensively, in my opinion. They've got to make sure they get more, and that in staying, getting themselves in more or not so many unmanageable third down situations. That just, well, I think if you go back and look at these third downs this year and what they haven't converted, that it's amazing. You look at the ones that are like third and eight and longer. I mean, the ones even over 10 yards, you scratch your head saying, oh man, no wonder you're not able to convert high percentage in these. So that's what you look at offensively. And when you flip it over to the defensive side of football, and they've gotten a better handle on this, is obviously the running explosive plays against have really been great. In fact, I think it's only I think the last one that they gave up was to Joe Mixon back in that game against the Bengals there. They are, however, giving up these you know, since that time and since they've gotten a handle on the running explosive plays, these passing explosive plays, while not a lot in volume, they have been big ones. You know, we're not just talking explosive plays. We're talking double and triple explosive plays. If they could just, I mean, you're going to give up explosive plays during a game. Let's say you give up three to four of them a game. As long as those are only 20 to 25 yards, you know, and you're leaving some grass to defend, chances are the Steelers defense is going to come away without allowing a touchdown on that drive. It's just the 40s and the 60s and the 70s that we've seen. And then, you know, make matters worse when you're letting those into the end zone the way I think a couple of these have against the Colts and the Titans. Those are what that don't give you any chance there. And as Mike Tomlin said too, the tackling, but we've been talking about tackling being a problem or inconsistent aspect with this team for several years now. The other kind of thing when you talk about this defense as well is, and Mike has said this as well too, gotta take advantage of these turnover opportunities that are oftentimes right in your hands there. So I'm not worried about a defense. And you say second half of the season last year, David, how that defense couldn't get any worse through the first eight games of the season last year. So to have them, I think the amount of improvement was the biggest aspect during the second half of the season. In fact, I think after the first nine games, I wrote Steelers won't win the Super Bowl you know, that year because of the way the defense has played. Obviously, you know, hard to pat yourself on the back because statistically and chance-wise and all like that, the odds were in the favor there. But they did make a bigger improvement during the second half of the season than I thought they would. This year, they have expounded on – I mean, they picked up kind of where they left off last year, and they've gotten better. And I'm not worried about this defense at this point. Barring injuries, this is a defense that can get you to the Super Bowl and win a championship. So I'm not worried about that. The biggest question mark right now is when they get into that one game, and there's always that one game during the playoffs where you wonder, can your offense help cover your defense? That's where kind of you wonder about right now when it comes to the Steelers team.
Fair enough. Anything else to throw out there?
They should blow them out.
They should blow them out. Look, let's get to our picks and we'll get to that. But yeah, I've been saying, you know, I said that after when we did our podcast last Friday, before even watching them play the Ravens, that I would not want to be the Packers Sunday night. I feel that way in spades right now about what I expect from the Steelers. Okay, yesterday did we get we had this? I think we had. I know we had the first two games the same, and we lost with the Lions, we won with the Chargers. I had the Skins and got a win. I don't remember which side you were on.
I believe I had the Skins on that as well too, and thankful for that last field goal there for sure.
Go for it on fourth down there. Go for it on fourth down, Ben, Mr. McAdoo. All right, and stop him on three plays and kick the field goal to get the win. That was a joyous moment for me as well. Happy Thanksgiving. Let's get to this week's games. Obviously, a little bit of a shorter slate with three games already off the board. But 1 o'clock, Cleveland at Cincinnati. The Browns are getting 8 points against the Bengals. The Bengals are still in the conversation because of the weakness in the AFC wildcard picture. So it matters for them. The Browns probably did play their best game of the season last week against the Lions. But it didn't get anything to show for it. Still winless on the season here. Dave, you know, whatever. Give me the Browns +8. I don't think they're going to get on the board with the win, but 8's still a lot of points. I don't think they're an awful team. They're an awful team. I don't think they're a get blown out every week team.
On Twitter either yesterday or day before, I put up there Browns are going to beat the Bengals this week. And I firmly believe that. So with that, give me Browns plus the points, and I think they get their first win of the season against the Bengals.
We got a lot of big lines this week. Three games here in the teams level, and it starts with the Eagles hosting the Bears at 13.5. And Dave, I'm going to take the Eagles here. I generally stay away from these games, but the reason is Philadelphia's ferocious front. I think we'll contain Trubisky and just make life very difficult for him. So I just don't see the Bears putting up the points to make this one competitive. The Eagles have been putting up points in bunches all season long. So, you know, something like 27-10, I'll lay the 13.5.
Boy, you just worry about some sort of a late, you know, give up touchdown or something ruining this or along those. I mean, obviously you'd be foolish not to pick the Eagles to win this. Something's going to happen at the end of this thing, David. I think so. To cover. So give me the Bears with a back door here.
Okay. Same drill again. Patriots 16.5. The Dolphins have been so bad offensively. I don't even know who's starting a quarterback, whether it's Cutler or Moore. But I don't think it's going to matter. The Patriots are going to put up 30 plus. So I'm going to lay it again.
Yeah, I mean, really, this Dolphins team has been a mess, to say the least. I don't think it's going to matter who starts at quarterback either. I'm with you. That's a big number, but I'll go ahead and lay it with you.
Buffalo getting 10 from the Chiefs. Another double-digit thing game here. Now, the whole world's down on the Chiefs. So and Buffalo's been as bad as you could be the last 3 weeks. But it's going to be Tyrod Taylor back at quarterback. give me 10. I'll take 10 here, just assuming the Bills have some level of pride, because if they get smoked again, I don't know what you do the rest of the season.
Boy, Chiefs can't run the ball. I mean, they're reverting back to some of the things. I mean, so Alex is looking like old Alex right now. They're not stretching the field any longer. I'm not sure. This is a big line based on what I've seen the last few weeks with the Chiefs. So because of that, I'm with you. I'm going to take the Bills plus those points.
Yeah, the Marcell Dareus numbers with the Bills in terms of the rushing yards they've given up since they traded him are crazy too. So it'll be interesting to see what the Chiefs do on the ground in that game. Another 10-point game, Dave. Falcons hosting the Bucks. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, with 10 points in this, is that, I'm showing 9.5, but if you're showing 10, Tampa Bay's a mess defensively right now, and you know, quarterback situation with Jameis Winston out, Matt Ryan at home. I mean, give me the Falcons at home and lay those 10.
They finally looked better. They finally looked better. I'll do it too. I'll take the over 48.5. I think the Bucs will score some points, but I think I like the over better than the Falcons, but I'll take the Falcons. Jets hosting the Panthers. Jets laying 5. I think we've seen kind of the Jets' true colors here get exposed a little bit. They did better than everybody expected through the first half of the season. Carolina is finally putting it together with Cam Newton and some of the other things. Look for Carolina big in this one.
Yeah. Give me the Panthers with this one as well, too. I'm not a believer in the Jets.
Titans -3 on the road at the Colts. I'll take the Titans.
Yeah, they need to get that running game going again, right? And I think that's going to be one of the big things that they want to do. And I think they should be able to do this one as well, too. So give me Tennessee on the road laying those points.
Dave, one of the things about people who gamble is – it's hard to sometimes when you have year-long kind of views of teams and the way things go, it's hard to get those out of your head. But Vegas gets them out of their head on a weekly basis. They are not beholden to kind of past history as being the driver for current events. And the Seahawks are a 6.5-point favorite over the Niners. It's in San Francisco. To a lot of people, that's going to seem like an incredibly light line. But if you've watched the Seahawks and know about all their defensive injuries and offensive line woes, that's why it is what it is, even though the Niners have been as bad as they've been. Where do you go with this one?
You got to take Seattle and lay those points on the road. I think they win this going away. So give me Seahawks laying the 6.5 on the road.
I'm not going to play this game. I'll take Seattle with you. But, no, I'll take the Niners. I'll take just because, you know, I think Vegas is telling us something. The line doesn't look right to me. I'm not going to play the game. The Niners, Bethard's going to start again. I mean, you would think sooner or later here, unless they are just solely playing for draft position here. I mean, you're going to have to pay this kid that you traded for. So you'd think you'd want to get him some you know, game action. I would think. You know, we got to be getting at that point now, a couple weeks in the system since they made the trade with the Patriots, that he's going to get on the field. But hadn't happened yet. Okay, maybe the game of the week. The Saints go to the Rams.
What'd you take on that game?
I took the Niners. At the end of the day, I took the Niners. The Saints go to the Rams. The Saints -2.5. The Rams -2.5 at home against the Saints. I love both these teams. I think they're the two of the most exciting teams in the NFL. This season, they're fun to watch. I want them both to win, but give me the Rams at home for fun.
Boy, after scoring that early touchdown last week, the Rams offense kind of fizzled out from there against the Vikings, I think. The Saints, they're getting it done on both sides of the football. I know better than this. Go against Wade Phillips, but I think the Saints are doing a good job on both sides of football. So give me the Saints plus the points.
Okay, Jags and Cards in Arizona. The Jags -5.5. Let's call the upset here. Give me the Cardinals +5.5 and maybe an outright win.
Wow, bold. That is bold. No way.
The Browns beating the Bengals. So
yeah. Give me the Jags to cover this.
Okay, Denver at Oakland. Denver season's over. Oakland season's pretty close to over. You're going to see Paxton Lynch for the first time this year getting a start. Nobody cares about this game. Give me the Broncos. Give me the Raiders and David Carr. Give me the Broncos +4.5. Paxton Lynch. I'm on the Paxton Lynch train.
Not me. Give me the Raiders to cover this.
All right. Sunday night, Texans at the Ravens. Texans getting 7. Savage played a little bit better this past week. 7's too many. Baltimore probably wins this game, but I'll take the points. That's the Monday night game, obviously.
I think there's a chance Baltimore comes away with another shutout here. I'm laying those 7 points.
And the last one, of course, the Steelers and the Packers, Dave. Easy victory for the Steelers. Calling it all week. 38-10, Steelers roll in this one. It's not close at any point. They get ahead early. It's comfortable, and we might even see a little Landry Jones.
I'm going to go, you know, I said that I'm not going to pick them to score 30 points until they actually score 30 points, and I know they did, but even so, I want to see them, now I've seen them do it once, I want to see them do it again. Until then, I'm going to pick them to score under 30 points. But even so, the Steelers defense should be good enough in this one. Steelers are going to get to 28 the hard way in this one. It'll be three touchdowns, a couple of field goals and something else happening here. 28-13 for the cover, to just barely cover on this one.
All right. Well, there you have it. Enjoy. There's a ton of college football on today. We got a slate of it's a good sports viewing next couple of days. So enjoy the games this afternoon and this evening, and of course, enjoy the game Sunday night. And hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving and is gorging on the leftovers.
Boy, the Iron Bowl this week, that should end up being a decent game there as well too. So yeah, most definitely. No Black Friday or Saturday or whatever for me. I'll be at the house all week here. So in the meantime, if you want to follow me on Twitter, please do so at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause for the holidays, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button upper right navigational bar, and David and I will be back at you on Monday on short sleep with the Steelers playing Sunday night there. So hopefully we're discussing the win, and David, have a great weekend.
Yeah, to all our listeners as well, have a great weekend, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.